This is the Pop Medic Podcast for May 18th, 2016. You're a real funny guy. Maybe you should tell jokes for a living. This is the Popmatic Podcast coming to you from Studio NPL in the heart of downtown Nashville. This is where you can rock out with your library card out. It is the most valuable card in your wallet. I am Brian, and joining me today are
Mike the Clown,
Amanda,
Bill,
Jeremy.
Here at the Popmatic Podcast, we love Maria Bamford, or at least I do.
I also do.
I like her.
I was just thinking, I gotta get tickets for that show.
Bamford is a brilliant comedian who will be appearing at TPAC on May 20th. And tie me to a fence post and call me Willie. Her new Netflix show, Lady Dynamite, will premiere the very same day.
Yeah, it's a theme.
Lady Dynamite is a satirical autobiographical show about Bamford's own experience being a successful stand-up, having a nervous breakdown, ending up living in your parents' house, and then becoming a successful stand-up again. I wonder when she's going to get some new material. But on this week, on this week's show, comedians. Jeremy, can you do a hot open? Make it hot.
I got a hot take on this
hot
one.
Mic, hot mic.
You guys are going to have to bear with me.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. So you guys may not know this about me, but I used to follow the Grateful Dead back in the 1970s.
This is my shocked face.
In the 1970s.
Negative four.
Dad was born in 1990.
Exactly. My dad's Doctor Who. No two shows are ever the same. You can hear, if you don't believe me, you can hear me hooting on Dick's Picks volumes 2, 4, and 7. If you want proof, the Dead were masters of taking songs from. I hate the Grateful Dead, but they. What? Here's the thing: is like they would take their songs and like, hey, let's put a 4-minute song on a record, and then they'd play it live, and apparently people were interested in hearing a 4-minute song for half an hour. Now I like half hour songs, but don't give me a 4-minute song. And last night I mixed some sparkling water with some orange juice, and it was great. But when the sparkling water was more than the orange juice, not so great. You know what I'm saying? Grateful Dead.
So clear.
I want my fish CDs back.
Okay.
Keep stretching that taffy, girl. That was a long way to go.
The point is...
There is a point.
You can do that sort of thing with a song. You can stretch... I'm kicking this. You can stretch it, that like taffy girl, and mix it up, change the key, do all this stuff. You kind of can't do that with jokes. You sort of have a set... structure of the setup, punchline, and the tag, and you could mix up the denominations of the holy men walking into a bar, but otherwise the rules are pretty much set in stone. Old jokes do not get new, but they sort of can take on the quality of a beloved song. I once saw comedian Jim Gaffigan, who is hilarious and prolific, but he did an encore of his famous Hot Pockets joke, which everyone there knew, and when he started into it, people cheered for it like it was Slash playing the opening riff of Sweet Child of Mine. So those jokes, you can expect them, and they're comfortable, and they don't surprise you, and so maybe they don't always age well because the sort of surprise of the humor is gone. Something else that doesn't age well is watermelons. Leo Anthony Gallagher Jr., otherwise known as Gallagher.
I love when you have so many tangents that I forgot what you're going to talk about. Even when you told me before this, and it's been on the list for a week.
Yeah.
That's why I did it. So Leo Anthony Gallagher Jr., otherwise known as Gallagher, built a career on smashing various items with the Sledge-O-Matic, which was a large sledgehammer. But most famously, he smashed watermelons. Now, he had other bits, too. He sang songs. He jumped on a giant couch that had a trampoline in it. And he had this long sort of, did you ever notice bit about how tomb and comb are spelled similarly, but they sound different.
Magic of English.
Whoa! You think it's tome? No. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I suddenly remember why I've never seen an entire one of his specials. Oh!
Exactly. But people are in the front row armed with umbrellas and raincoats to protect themselves from flying fruit. It's sort of what cemented his career and gained him the most popularity. He came up through the Comedy Store scene in L.A. in the 1970s. This is the same place that saw the rise of folks like Jay Leno and Robin Williams, not to mention the renaissance of Richard Pryor, and also mountains of cocaine. His work is obviously very visual, so maybe it's not best suited for a podcast. But his records sort of don't stand out like those of the same era of Steve Martin or George Carlin. The pinnacle of his career sort of came with the rise of premium cable channels like HBO and Showtime, and the VHS revolution of the 1980s. Between 1980 and 1987, Gallagher produced 10 comedy specials, but it was 1984's Melon Crazy, which cemented his fame and forever associated him with wasting food. Gallagher gained infamy in 2011 by walking out during an interview on Mark Maron's WTF podcast.
I was totally going to bring that up.
Yeah, Gallagher was angry and unhinged during most of the interview, making claims about having patents and making all these inventions. And he even once said that he owned the rights to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Jealous. He even complains about comedians drinking water on stage.
He just wants to smash it.
Yeah, exactly.
Why wouldn't you smash it? You should smash that water if it's on the stage.
That's my impression of Gallagher.
Like
thanks. So things kind of heat up when Maron presses Gallagher about making hacky street jokes based on racist, homophobic, and ethnic stereotypes. And Gallagher eventually is like, why can't you make a joke about that? That's fine. It's clear that he feels very bitter about being left behind by sort of the shift in comedy over the last couple of decades. And he gets up and storms out.
Dang you, Maria Bamford!
Darn your horse!
So you're recommending him?
When I was a boy.
So the library has what?
You can listen to a few Gallagher things on
the WTF thing's probably up behind a paywall now, so you can't even listen. To
you
that.
Can listen to it on YouTube, or check it out on Howl FM. The Gallagher stuff is on. Hoopla, and I was interested when we said we were going to talk about comedians. I was really interested because, like, when I was a small kid, I thought that was hilarious. Smashing stuff. I was like, oh my god, he's going to smash that water. I don't even like watermelon, and that might be why, because I was like, that guy hates it, and that guy's got long hair under a hat. I bet there's more hair under that hat, or not.
If he smashed tomatoes, he'd be my favorite comedian.
So yes. You can get his stuff on Hoopla.
Yeah, there's a few Gallagher things.
Cool.
Hoopla.
Amanda, what do you have?
Whoa. Wow.
The shepherd's crook out.
At least I showed up on time.
Wow. So it has become clear to me that I am now a lady of a certain age. While I'm still totally cool, I am no longer hip to what the kids are saying these days, faux shizzle. I just educated Mike a little bit.
They don't say that.
They don't say that anymore.
Oh, wait, that was a joke.
That was a joke. Keep with me. So anyway, for me and my generation, we grew up with comedy on TV, but since my family only had Amish cable, we didn't get to see all the edgy shows on HBO.
Wait a second.
Today, you ever heard of Amish cable?
Today on ABC,
we're going to
be churning some butter.
No, okay, Amish cable means we had the major networks. Plus WGN, plus Fox.
Okay.
We were fancy.
$10 a month, right?
I don't remember. I was bored and didn't pay for it.
There was a joke on Conan O'Brien about the Amish Playboy channel, and it was like...
ankles?
It was this, yeah.
So anyway.
It's good for podcasts.
Not podcast humor now.
All right, so I don't know where I was. Okay, so that meant that most of my favorite comedians got famous on Saturday Night Live. Now, I am not old enough to remember the awesome original cast of Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, and Gilda Radner. But luckily, by the time I got to college, there was a resurgent in the talent with folks like Tim Meadows, Amy Poehler, and Fred Armisen. And my favorite in this bunch was, of course, Jimmy Fallon. He's tied with Tina Fey, who I may bring up later. But you knew it was going to be a good sketch when he and Horatio Sanz would get the giggles in the middle. Sometimes they could
so much.
And Bloodborne Michaels, too. Sometimes they could contain it, sometimes they couldn't, but it was always funny either way. Jimmy started his SNL career by doing song parodies on Weekend Update, kind of like Adam Sandler. And the library has Fallon's Best of SNL DVD that you can check out if you missed it or just want to watch again. In 2002, Jimmy also featured his musical parodies on his debut comedy album called The Bathroom Wall, where he tries to create celebrity commercials for troll dolls, and he also does a musical version. Now, the bands that he imitates are very of the 90s, but I would like to refer you to the earlier Lady of a Certain Age comment, because these are my people. In 2009, Fallon took over for Conan O'Brien on NBC's Late Night, and then in 2012, he put out his second comedy album called Blow Your Pants Off that won the 2013 Grammy for Best Comedy Album. Most of the tracks on the album are from skits that he did on the show. Some of them leave me a little bit flat, but this album features my favorite Jimmy Fallon idea ever. In 2010, Fallon BFF Justin Timberlake was on Late Night, and they came up with the brilliant idea to perform the history of rap, which is 30 years of rap in 3 minutes, and it's hilarious. I said a hip hop, a hippie to the hippie to the hip hip hop, and you don't stop. Rock it to the bang bang, boogie, sit up, jump, the body rock the rhythm of the boogie to me. Now what you get is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. Peter Piper picked peppers over rock rhyme. Humpty Dumpty fell down. That's his dog time. A Jack be nimble, Pop nimble, and he was quick. But Jenna Master caught the faster dash, so did she. Now here's a little story I got to tell about three bad brothers you know so well. It started way back in history with that. So the first installment is track 2 on the CD, but the segment proved so popular that Timberlake and Fallon have created 5 more installments over the past 6 years, and you can see all of them legally online. And I'll have Brian put a link to, there's a group of just 1 through 4 in the show notes. He'll give you a link to that. Now, the library has the CD for Blow Your Pants Off, but both albums are available on Hoopla. Even if you don't like Jimmy Fallon, you have to admit the history of rap is awesome.
Yeah. I like Rapper's Delight. Not enough fruit smashing for me.
Okay, speaking of Saturday Night Live, Here's a trivia question. Who was the first guest host on Saturday Night Live?
Bobby St. Marie. Carlin.
Steve
George
Martin.
Carlin. That's right. George Carlin in October 1975, and I was 15 years old, and I remember watching it. I remember the old game. Oh, by the way, can you tell me who the first musical guests were? This is too complicated.
I know. Lauren Nero.
Right?
I should know that, and I don't know it.
Billy Preston and Janice Ian. They had two.
That's right.
Yep. She lives here now in Nashville.
That's right. I knew it was a woman.
Now back to George Carlin, who you probably gather is the topic of what I want to talk about, who was a stand-up comic, but I feel he was more than just a stand-up comic. Carlin's 7 Dirty Words routine was the central to a 1978 Supreme Court case, the FCC versus Pacifica Foundation, in which 5-4 decision affirmed the government's power to regulate indecent material on the airwaves. Now, how many comics can you say was part of a Supreme Court ruling? Not Gallagher, but I'm a George Carlin fan, and one of the funniest things I've ever heard him say was, this is George Carlin, how many times have you heard this at your house? Who's got the good scissors? In my case, all the time. His comedy was very unique, take on the political scene, language, and forbidden topics. He was a social critic. I can remember twice in college, professors would play his comedy routines to illustrate the points they were trying to make. The two comedy routines were A Place for My Stuff and Baseball and Football, the differences between both. Both brilliant. I was recently on vacation in Los Angeles, and I went to the Grammy Museum, and as luck would have it, they had a George Carlin display, and it was great. They had his Grammy Award, his Mark Twain Award, and they had this television set going all the time, just showing of him hosting and appearing on The Tonight Show, and that's where he really shined. And can't believe this, but my mother even liked George Carlin. She didn't like comics. So now that I've whetted your appetite, go to the library website and go to Hoopla Streaming and type in George Carlin, and you will find audiobooks, comedy CDs, and videos of his routines. They even have the original 7 Dirty Words. And also in our library collection, I would like to highly recommend books written by Mr. Carlin. In our library collection, we have Napalm and Silly Putty, and When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops? And his biographies appropriately titled Last Words. George Carlin passed away June 22, 2008, but his work is still relevant, and thanks to the Nashville Public Library and Hoopla, you can still enjoy it. Brian.
All right. I'm definitely going to talk about a comedian that was influenced by George Carlin, and that comedian is Bill Hicks. He's the only comedian that's ever made me laugh so hard I thought I was going to pass out because I couldn't catch my breath. So Hicks was a stand-up comic that gained success in the early 90s after being hailed as a genius through much of the 1980s, but never achieving a broad audience. He was known for his uncompromising, bitter satire. He had a particular beef against the role of marketing in contemporary society, which you can hear in this little bit.
By the way, if anyone here is in marketing or advertising, kill yourself. Thank you. Just planting seeds. Planting seeds is all I'm doing. No joke here. Really, seriously, kill yourself. You are no rationalization for what you do. You are Satan's little helpers. Kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself now. Now, back to the show. Seriously, I know the market people, there's going to be a joke coming out. There's no joke. Suck a tailpipe, hang yourself, borrow a pistol from an NRA buddy, do something, rid the world of your evil presence. Okay, back to the show.
And then he would follow up with a little something like this.
I am available for children's parties right now.
As you can hear, he wasn't afraid to be confrontational with his audience. He definitely believed in the Lenny Bruce philosophy of stand-up, that being that the show was supposed to be a catharsis and that the comedy club was sort of an anything-goes kind of space with no rules. Throughout his career, he was a regular on the David Letterman late-night programs. Dave had a reputation for being the, quote, edgy, unquote, late-night host, but Hicks' final performance on Letterman in 1993 was actually censored. Hicks made some abortion jokes, and these were excised from the telecast. The material was pre-approved by Letterman and his team, but that night, a pro-life group had bought some advertising time, so it didn't make it past the corporate censor. It's interesting. Hicks was outraged because it wasn't like CBS had any moral qualms about his material. It was just they just didn't want to anger like a potential client or revenue stream. Hicks was furious. That was his last appearance on the show, not just because he was angry, but because he died soon after of pancreatic cancer at the ripe old age of 32. Then he became a legend. In 2009, Letterman invited Hicks' mother, Mary, onto his show. He apologized to her and aired her son's performance in its entirety. Now, unless we deify Mr. Hicks too much, I should point out that sometimes he lived up to his name. He liked to push buttons, but sometimes he just came off like another angry, homophobic, misogynistic redneck. If you compare, say, his Debbie Gibson versus Jimi Hendrix routine versus the kind of jokes that Maron was ribbing Gallagher about, it would be an interesting analysis. He did start out as a teenager from Texas, but the older he got, the more worldly he became. Sometimes he wouldn't challenge the audience in a meaningful way, but merely just rant and scream at them while he was drunk and high. I don't know if substance abuse caused his cancer, but I know that it didn't help it at all. So he dies young and he goes on and influences a whole generation of comics. One of those comics was the previously mentioned Marc Maron. Maron aped Hicks's routine of touring endlessly, doing material about drugs, and screaming hostily at the audience. But Maron didn't die when he was 32. And after years of gigging, he realized that comedy clubs were the bottom rung of the entertainment ladder. If only he could have died like his hero, Bill Hicks. But he was still alive. So he said, WTF, and started a podcast in his garage, which you may have heard of. We reference it many times. I think that Maron's worth pointing out because this is the comedians episode. And if you want awesome interviews with other comedians, I think those are Maron's best episodes. When he interviews other comedians, there's just like a different rapport, and they're the best, most interesting, funniest episodes. But this segment is about Bill Hicks and not the comics that he inspired. We have all of Bill Hicks's oeuvre on Hoopla. That rhymed! I recommend Rant in E minor, in particular, the bit about Jay Leno, which is kind of ironic because Jay Leno actually hooked up Bill Hicks. He got him his first appearance on Letterman. But by the end, Mr. Hicks had a beef with Mr. Leno.
We all do. It's okay.
But you have to listen to find out what that is. That is the bit that made me laugh so hard I thought I was going to pass out.
Is it that Doritos commercial?
It's the Doritos commercial is mentioned.
Wow. Well, I could go into Bill Hicks, but our time is limited. So when we announced this episode would be on comedians instead of comedy, I thought it would be fun to talk about one of those times a comedian did a dramatic turn. It does seem like after a while, comedians tire of getting laughed at and want to be taken more seriously. Or a comedian's career could go like Jim Carrey's if he laughed at for other reasons. You know, an entire movie about how the number 23 can warp reality. That's a movie that exists. So I suppose for me, the poster child for this phenomenon was the late Robin Williams, who spent most of his career in drama. You know, if you look at his IMDb page, he made over 50 movies, but they're probably like less than 10 comedies. I tried to like name them all, but then it got too long.
Jack?
Is that really a comedy, though?
You know, not supposed to be.
I watched part of one with him and, like, Walter Matthau, and I was just like, you could have done so much better. How much coke did you do?
Apparently not enough.
Yeah, too much. So today I thought I'd talk a little bit about a seemingly forgotten film in both his and Christopher Nolan's filmographies, Insomnia from 2002.
They brought him in to solve an unspeakable crime.
Detective Dormer, it's such an honor to meet you. I'm Detective Ellie Burr. Welcome to Nightmute.
So incredible to be working with you. The Leland Street murders was my case study at the Academy.
Someone out there just beat a 17-year-old girl to death. Your job is to find him.
Doesn't say in the report that he clipped her nails. He washed her hair.
No mutilation?
Not this time.
He tortures him, makes him do things, and keeps him there for 3 days.
This guy, he crossed the line, and he didn't even blink.
Police!
What Detective Dormer doesn't know is that murder is only part of the plan.
Dormer here.
Killing changes you. It's like awareness.
Who am I speaking to?
Sleep well.
He will taunt you.
You and I share a secret. We know how easy it is to kill somebody.
He will torment you.
Can't be easy after 3 days of no sleep. Are you seeing things yet?
And those little tricks of light.
He will get inside your head.
There's a ferry about 5 miles north of Nightmute. I'll be on 11 o'clock.
I have great respect for your profession, but the situation isn't yours to control, Will.
You're trying to impress me, Finch. You had the wrong guy.
It took you 10 minutes to beat Kate Connell to death.
No evidence that I killed Kay. You only know it because I told you.
Are you doing okay? I mean, you haven't been sleeping much, Detective Dormer.
Another night up like this and you're really going to lose it.
Now the game has turned deadlier than he ever imagined.
This whole thing you're doing ain't going to work with me.
Hold it!
Where is she, Finch?
Don't worry, Will. You can sleep when you're dead.
Al Pacino, in possibly his last good role, stars as Will Dormer, one of a pair of cops from L.A.
Agreement.
I'm sorry. I was agreeing with you.
You like my sick bird? Yeah, I was like 2002. I was like, well, I liked him in Devil's The Devil's Advocate. Oh, that came out in 1997. Never mind. One of a pair of cops sent from L.A. to Night Butte, Alaska to assist in a murder investigation. It turns out that the police chief up there was friends with Dormer. I mean, it's just a weird reason, you know. Unbeknownst to the locals, his partner Eckhart has agreed to testify against Dormer in an upcoming investigation from Internal Affairs. Uh-oh! A scheme to discover the identity of the murderer goes awry, and a mysterious shooter escapes in a fog bank, and Dormer accidentally shoots Eckhart. Oh, no! Eckhart accuses Dormer of shooting him on purpose to delay or get rid of the investigation, and then dies. He's like, you know, why did you do this to me? Just sounds so bitter, you know. I guess I could be bitter too if I just got killed. Dormer's like, what? No way. I totally didn't shoot you on purpose. It was foggy, eh? Hilary Swank plays Ellie Burr, a local cop assigned to investigate Eckhart's shooting. Ooh. But then now it gets really interesting because Dormer goes to the local police station and switches out the bullet matching his gun to the one matching the mysterious shooter from earlier. And then Robin Williams calls him on his cell phone. What? Robin Williams plays Walter Finch, a local crime writer. The police suspected him because he writes about crime a lot. But he has...
He's like Castle.
Yeah. Yeah. But creepier. But he has an alibi. Finch says something like, yeah, I know you suspect me, and I totally did it. Ha ha. But if you accuse me, I'll say that I saw you shoot your partner and tried to blame me for it. Man, it is so freeing to be completely honest with you. And then he goes, he talks about murdering a 17-year-old girl for denying his advances. And how, you know, him and Dormer should really team up and write crime stories after they frame somebody else for murdering her. It's like, oh, this is so gross. Comedy game. I won't go into the plot past this point, but trust me, it gets really twisty and cool. Two last observations. An interesting conceit is that Night Mute Alaska, one of my favorite place names other than Hammerfest, is one of those places where it is in constant daylight for part of the year. And Dormer is incapable of sleeping through the whole movie. By day four, he's beginning to hallucinate. You know, the last part of the movie, he's just like kind of limping along, like, you know, his eyes all open and crazy. This, of course, ratchets up the tensions as he needs to end the investigation as quickly as possible before he literally dies from sleeplessness. Lastly, I suppose the reason why it's never mentioned as one of Nolan's best is that Insomnia is perhaps his most straightforward movie. The only bit of symbolism, really, is that the ends don't justify the means, which is so easy that my mom, who hates symbolism, would totally pick up on that. Dear Mac, she would say. He apparently wrote the final draft of the script, but didn't get final writing credit. I felt this was more like a for-hire thing that he did, you know, to get rep with the studio.
To get money for Batman?
Yeah.
Wasn't it a remake of like a Swedish movie?
Yeah, a Norwegian film from 1998.
I remember seeing it.
Yeah, it's on the Criterion Collection. I didn't even see it. Good stuff. Comedy, y'all.
Did he wear the rainbow suspenders?
No. Aww. He may have strangled a woman.
Motor weapon.
Yeah.
Gotta mix it up. Nanu.
All right.
How come he doesn't make any more movies?
Well, the zombie Robin Williams is busy making Zombie Aladdin.
That's true.
His last film was partially filmed in Nashville. He filmed at that ice cream parlor that used to be a bank.
Yeah, that's
Mike's Ice Cream.
Yeah. Hey, what is this movie?
Oh, what's that one he did where, like, he's a closeted gay guy who's, like...
It's
theatrically...
The title is Boulevard, released in 2014. Hey, guys.
Hi, baby.
Oh, what do we do on Tickle My Fancy besides giggle? Because it's...
Well...
Tickle it hard, you tickle it hard.
Maybe Larry does it.
It's like the hardcore rock and roll
version. Fancy.
Fancy.
Maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. Either way, it's tickling our fancy. Bill.
Tickling my fancy. For all of you know who have Amazon Prime Video, I want to recommend this. It's a documentary, That Guy Dick Miller. And it's about a character actor named Dick Miller, who has been in movies like It Conquered the World, War of the Satellites, A Bucket of Blood, Little Shop of Horrors, The
Gremlins
Trip,
1 and 2.
Piranha, The Howling, Gremlins, The Terminator, and many more, like 200 television and screen credits.
The Undead.
You played a leper in that movie, right?
Yeah, it cleared up my skin nice. A friend of mine was working for Roger Corman, and he had to drop something off, and I said, can I go with you?
The first film Dick and I worked on together was Apache Woman.
Dick Miller was an essential part of those early Corman films.
Hi.
My friends are still amazed, and the people that I work with, that my brother's an actor, and he's been in so many films, and he's such a well-known face.
A bite out of what?
Someone once told me he made about 300 of them, which is an awful lot.
Dick Miller arrives in whatever scene.
Hire Dick Miller. I'll write him a part for the picture.
Yeah, he said I was going to shoot my ear off. That ain't nice.
When Dick walked in the room, it was like, oh, I know this guy.
Ready for the question from behind the magic hole board?
I kept seeing Dick Miller everywhere.
He seems to have come out here to be a writer and sort of ignored it completely.
I was writing. I wasn't selling too much.
It's a tough business, and it's full of hopes and dreams and disappointments. Because of that, I don't think he allows himself to be totally accessible.
Listen, I tell you something now, big secret.
I don't know what. I really literally don't know what happened.
Did you ever dream of being a star in those days?
As all actors can tell you, it's not a gravy train all the way through.
Let me finish, will you?
What he was the underdog who rises to the occasion and conquers.
He's like the Washington Monument of actors.
No, that's what I said.
I was just really impressed with Dick. This guy doesn't get enough big parts.
Schmuck.
He's definitely a good luck charm. They used him in every movie they ever did.
My ass.
If you're on screen for a very short period of time, are you working slightly bolder strokes?
Let's get out of here.
It's the fact that he's so Dick Miller. He's so himself. Completely 100% pure Dick Miller.
Dick Miller is the quintessential character actor.
Gremlins.
I was just staying alive making movies. I think I must have been 4 or 5 pictures before I realized I was a movie actor.
What was her first argument?
That's what I'm trying to argue about.
The movie not only interviews Dick Miller, but it also interviews certain collaborators and filmmakers he works with, like Joe Dante, John Davidson, Tina Hirsch, Jonathan Kaplan, Steve Carver, and plus many, many more. So in short, if you're a film geek like myself, you will enjoy that guy, Dick Miller, streaming on Amazon Line. Keep an eye on it. I'm going to look for it for the DVD release so the library can have it. But for you that have Amazon Prime, you can get it for free right now.
Amanda, what's tickling your fancy?
Well, for this week, I'm going to stay in the same genre and talk about Jimmy Fallon's ex-work wife, Tina Fey. I have mentioned before that I like the comedy pairing of Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, and I'm pretty much committed to seeing every movie they ever make ever. So this means I had to see their latest release, which was called Sisters. Now, usually Tina Fey plays the straight-laced, uptight one, and Amy Poehler is the wild child. However, in Sisters, they have reversed the roles. Fey is the irresponsible but fun-loving older sister, while Poehler is the hyper-neurotic younger sibling.
Hey, girl!
Hey!
Ella's sister reunion!
What's your deal?
I've been having a lot of fun.
I don't need lotion in there.
Shh. Yeah, you do need lotion in there.
We are looking for a yard artisan to do some work on our bushes.
I bet working on other people's bushes really makes you want to whack your weeds.
I was dirtier than I thought. I'm sorry, but I got dirty really fast.
Mom and Dad sold our childhood home.
This should have been passed on.
All we need you to do is clean out your bedroom.
Oh, my. It's a damn shame that you never had your night here.
We cannot have a party.
You've been divorced 2 years. You can't avoid putting yourself out there forever.
Do not work me like this. You have so much to do.
You have to invite that cute guy from down the street.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm Mara.
I'm James.
I just wanted to say hi, so that's done.
Oh.
It's a lot of underteat, but I think I'm getting away with it.
It's on backwards.
I don't get this dress. One of my apples keeps rolling out of the bag.
But I like the story it tells with the fringe. Oh, here we go.
Yes, I be a woman.
I've been thinking.
Why?
Will you not drink tonight so I can let my freak flag fly?
I would love to.
I heard you were having a party from someone who got invited. It's pretty sad.
It's a snazzy bell.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, congrats on your wrestling championship.
We need to say goodbye to this house.
But we sure
had fun here. You're the type of badass that I'm susceptible to.
My safe word is keep going.
Everyone, start cleaning up the area where they're standing. Did you fall on something sharp?
Yeah.
It's my ballerina music box. It really is a beautiful melody. And we're done. Nope.
So the sisters come together for one last party in their old house before their parents sell it. And this time, Faye promises to be the finger quotes party mom so that Poehler can finally get her freak on. Ike Barinholtz of Mad TV fame plays the hot neighbor that Amy pursues for her party night. And ladies, I'll admit that he was not my cup of tea, so you can totes have him. My three favorite roles were John Cena, who almost steals the movie with several well-placed one-liners.
John Cena.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
He's also a great Amy Schumer.
Yeah, Trainwreck.
Trainwreck.
Yeah.
Also, my boy John Leguizamo, rocking the drunk townie like nobody's business. And Tina Fey's hair, which completely rocked. And if I could figure out how to steal it, I totally would. So this movie isn't quite as funny as I had hoped. I can kind of compare it to Will Ferrell's Step Brothers, which was not as good as Ricky Bobby, but still enjoyable. I'm still all in with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. So, sisters, watch it.
Did you ever hear that rap song about John Cena from a couple of years ago?
I did not.
It's like some white kid who, like, seems like he's been, like, huffing pain. He's like, the first thing I want for Christmas, go figure, is a brand new John Cena action figure. And it's like all this stuff is like, a new John Cena t-shirt. And, like, everything is this John Cena. It's really funny.
But he needs to watch this movie because John Cena has a great role.
I'm sending the end of the credit stinger for this episode.
Amanda, did you see, maybe it's not out yet, this is a Tina Fey dramedy about she plays an embedded reporter in Afghanistan.
No, I haven't. I want to see that too. I saw that. Yeah.
I liked it.
I want to see it.
Yeah, it's
good. Okay. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Yes, that's what it's called.
That came out earlier this year.
Yeah, I don't think the library doesn't have it yet. Yeah. At least I haven't seen it come through.
Mike, what's tickling your fancy?
This is another one of those pop culture weeks where I recommend like 5 to 10 things. But instead, I'll go with the one that made me so excited I ran through my house like Kermit with my arms waving in the air.
I've
and
never my
head tilted back, yelling excitedly. Yeah.
Kermit runs?
You've never seen Kermit run? That's why he does that thing?
It's hard to think of it as running because you don't see his feet.
Yeah, he doesn't have legs.
Yeah.
Oh, he's walking.
Muppet baby Kermit is running.
A hand up his body is moving very quickly.
His puppeteer is running around the room by himself. Okay, I'm sorry. I derailed you.
I just
now, if you think that's weird, just see the Muppets comic book we have where like you just see all their legs. And
stuff. Oh, yeah.
Like,
that's either, like, that's weird. And
stuff.
That's weird.
It just destroyed the third wall for me.
It's unnatural.
I just the third keep thinking wall? Of Rigel from Farscape.
Sorry, you lost
sorry,
me.
Sorry, killed the mood.
Obscure Farscape references. I prefer.
Are there not obscure Farscape references?
I always thought Brian was the Christ of the podcast. One of my favorite things that's not come up on the podcast so far is that.
I got him.
Jeremy Lee.
I've seen like one episode of Farscape, but I liked it.
Thank you.
It changes after the first season. It's good.
Yeah, wow. It changes a lot. One of my favorite things that I have not mentioned on the podcast so far is that I love game shows.
Really?
I used to watch Game Show Network with passion.
Wow.
Now it's only not only the show, it's Family Feud on Game Show Network.
I love The Feud. My sister invited me to The Feud next month, but I can't make it. I'm going to release that.
Oh, they filmed The Feud near in Georgia.
They filmed in Atlanta, man. Yeah, I can tell Steve Harvey insisted it be filmed in Atlanta for some reason. So.
See Steve Harvey and he came.
Because he didn't want to move?
Yeah.
That's awesome. If you go, let me know. I want to go to The Feud.
Yeah, totally.
Jeremy will go as
you do. We need to make a Feud date. You know?
I've been to The Price is Right, you guys.
What? Did Get out.
I did not. Bob Barker, though.
Did you have the giant sticker with your name on, though?
Bob Barker.
I did.
Oh,
I made a t-shirt that said Bob Barker for president in 2008.
Squee!
I went in 2006.
Wow. Awesome. All right. We need to talk about the health pod. Plus, you know, since I cut the cord, I've been able to watch anything on Game Show Network / Jeopardy and Feud. Like, you know, I can't watch them legally because they don't, you know, I've got four channels and they're not on there.
But you have Amish cable.
Tonight on ABC, I'm going to play this.
Tonight on We Just Invented the Wheel of Fortune.
Why are buttons so evil?
What is
I read once that the Amish don't believe in buttons.
Yeah.
No, they believe in buttons, not zippers.
No, they believe in hook and eye, not
buttons. Yeah.
Alec Baldwin is going to host an exclusive, executively produce a new 10-episode run of Match Game this summer.
Oh.
Part of an ABC game show block. That's my favoriteest game show of all time.
Really?
Match Game was a show in the 70s where host Gene Rayburn would say a sentence or phrase that ended in blank, and a contestant was to try and match what a panel of celebrity guests said. I'm going to say my favorite one, which Brian will probably cut because it's quite risque. something like, and I can only find a paraphrase, remember my uncle who thinks he's a hot dog? He covered himself in mustard, and now he's sitting on my blank. But so, it's often really risque, because many of the times, the most obvious answer was something that could not be said on 70s television. After binging for hours on Game Show Network, even the ones that sounded fairly innocuous, my guess would be super dirty. And of course, the contestant would guess something completely random, which is part of the fun, because it's like, you know, they're like, would, you know, car? No! Something dirty. I really hope that dirty they get celebrities who are friends IRL, like Brett Summers and Charles Nelson Reilly were, because that was super fun, too, seeing them banter back and
forth. Charles Nelson Reilly. Yeah. You do like game shows. You ever see that clip from the Newlywed Game where he says, where's the strangest place you've ever made whoopee?
Ah, yes.
And then the woman says...
In the butt.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. I also have loved game shows.
The one with the feud where they're like, what month do you give? What's the month where you most often give, like, you know, people are, what's it, pregnancy, like, you know, when the baby pops out or whatever? And what month?
No.
You know, it's supposed to be, you know, in 9 or 7 or 8 months, you know, uh-huh. And they said September.
Game shows, a good reason why marijuana should be illegal. Jeremy, what's tickling your fancy this week?
Remember, bro.
Tickling my fancy is a book called Sleeping Giants by Sylvain Neuvel. One of my favorite parts of my job is descending into the depths of the library every afternoon to retrieve the new books from Mike's dungeon. I have to answer a pun-based riddle before I'm granted entry, but usually this is no problem. I skim.
What is a door? Not a door. Answer me these questions three. Or your book you will never see.
Because.
Well, that would be awesome if it was true.
Wow. Yes. I wasn't intended to set you up that well, but that's fantastic.
You've been working on that one for a while.
So normally I pick the books up. If something looks interesting, I'll flip through it, you know. So the other day, I picked up a book. This book, Sleeping Giants, and I noticed it was sort of structured almost entirely as a series of interviews with different people. So it looked like it would be a very quick read, which was something that I wanted because I finally finished the nearly 1,100 pages of it. And I was right. It was a fantastic, enjoyable read. The interview structure made the book very incredibly fast-paced, and the plot unfolds completely through the voices of the characters, and most of which are pretty well developed. Some know what, some not so much. But a lot of the action is off the page. You don't exactly know what's going on because there's sort of people are being secretive, and one person knows something, another person doesn't know. And the book is about they find a robot in the ground, and aliens made it, and then they put the robot together, and they find the pieces all over the world. And it's the first book of a trilogy. The next one is supposed to come out next year, and it was really good, Sleeping Giants.
I remember one time Amanda was like, it's a trilogy because everything has to be a trilogy now, and I'm just like, I don't know if that's true. And you were right!
I was right.
Everything's a series.
Don't mess with the trilogy.
You were so right.
I think that might have been the only thing that I didn't like about it. Was
now you have to wait.
Now, does it have a satisfying conclusion, or is it just like, ends?
It ends with a cliffhanger.
Nah.
So,
like a good trilogy.
I mean, not like, oh, are they going to make it, but like, whoa, you know, like Lost kind of thing. Like,
if they made it.
Yeah. We got to go back. That kind of thing. Still good, though.
No, I was thinking of the old Conan skit.
Oh, if they made it.
I digress. You know, I got to tell you, what does not tickle my fancy is Elvis Costello's voice. But the voice that does tickle my fancy...
That was for you.
...is Roy Orbison. And Roy Orbison once did a song called The Comedians.
It's always something cruel that laughter drowns. And I'm a colored dawn, it breaking even. My heart is aching high.
But it was a bait and switch because the song The Comedians was written by Elvis Costello.
Whoa!
Rabbit hole.
Yeah. This is amazing.
Do you really like the song, or you just brought it?
You can never.
No, I sent him. I said, "Hey, Elvis wrote a song called 'The Comedians.' You should stick it in the show."
You just all over the bit. All right. Okay. All right.
I'm surprised you mentioned it.
I've never heard that song. You also said in a recent episode that you were on a country noir kick, or you enjoyed country noirs. Sincerely, I got a country noir for you.
Not a false tickle.
He's known as a false tickler.
Indeed.
Twilight.
More like a poker.
Twilight by Stephanie Meyer. No. great country noir.
Northwestern noir.
Such a sidewinding tickler this week.
Twilight by William Gay, Tennessee's own William Gay, is an amazing country noir that we just read in the Second Wednesday Book Club. What's interesting about Gay's writing is it's very ornate. He's from the sort of Southern Gothic tradition of Faulkner and Reynolds Price. You know, he writes these very poetic, elaborate sentences, but the structure of the book and the characters are all hard-boiled crime. There's no character development. There's just plot. In a lot of ways, it's this weird inversion of like sort of the rules of crime writing, in that you cut out all the description, but he like loads up all this poetic description. There's a bad killer. There's a dame. There's a kid who's totally good, and perhaps he's going to have to pay a price for it. Twilight by William Gay, an amazing book. Gay's been on my to-read list for years. I am remiss. How many times I'm remiss about a lot of stuff on this podcast, aren't I?
We all are.
I apologize to the reading community in Nashville, in the world. I should have read William Gay so much earlier than this. Such a good book, Twilight by William Gay. Nothing funny about the book at all. It's horrible. Death, murder, bad stuff happens.
It's right up your alley.
Yeah, yeah. Really, yeah. Corrections! Does anyone have any corrections?
I don't.
I do not.
I have two. One is, it's Vincent Schiavelli, not Vincent Schiappelli, who was the sad sack Vince Subway ghost in Ghost. Oh well.
No, you're fired.
I'm so sad, it looks like my face is hanging from my skull, much like Vincent Schiavelli's face. And...
Go easy on him, he just switched to decaf. He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
He was?
Yeah, that's what he says.
Oh, that's
he has a really...
I've never seen that movie.
You should see it. It's amazing.
I know. It's like
really
our generation.
Amazing.
I need to watch it.
I've seen 2 minutes of it.
And it's so good. It's so good.
I don't know. Maybe I'm too old for it. And lastly, apologize for the quality of the last episode. I was busted by ghost. I ain't afraid of no ghost.
Who are you going to call?
I like when you touch your... Clutch your chest like you have the vapors or something. That's good.
That's his honesty.
Yes, I do like, you know.
Ascot is rubbing against the microphone.
I'm being real, y'all.
I'm cutting that. There's no excuses. I have one correction. Drive came out in 2011 and is based on James Salas's 2005 novel, Drive. It is not a remake of the 1978 Walter Hill directed The Driver.
I bet you anything he was influenced by it.
Yeah, I bet John Salas was. James Salas.
James Salas.
Yeah, Ink episode. I actually read that book, and it didn't make an impression on me that I was halfway through the movie before I was like, oh yeah, I read this book.
There it is. Oh.
Yeah.
The character in the book is named Driver, though.
Yes.
So, the Driver. For more information about things we got wrong, go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Our theme music is by
Adam Dean. You can subscribe to the PopMedic podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and via RSS. Next week, Bark at the Moon. We'll put a sample. Bark at the Moon. I don't know. We'll be right back. funny gals.
Or guys.
I watched Comedians of Comedy when I was sick. She's on that.
It's a good film.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Now every time I think of Patton Oswalt, I get sad face.
I enjoyed her alienation in that movie.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
Like, I'm on this bus with a bunch of frat guys, and I want to die.
Didn't Hossein say something really
I know how
mean?
She feels. At least you're not on a bus.
No, now I'm going to explain to you how you really feel about that, Amanda.
Just snarf with my coffee in this mixer that doesn't belong to Pop Mat. Don't do that.
Let's talk about boy things some more.
So in order to work a state fair, you have to take the Gallagher class.
You have to work faster and more general. There are families out there, and they're not interested in your long, subtle stories.
Okay, that's fine. That's the state fair circuit. But the comedy club circuit, the cabaret circuit, can indulge a different... Why can't you just see it as all being part of show business? Why are
because
you angry?
Because there's no show involved. What? They're a bunch of slovenly... they hunch over. They turn their back on the audience. They take a
that's
drink
their style.
Of water.
It's show business. Why are you drawing lines?
Why are you taking the other side of everything I say?
I'm not. I'm just saying
you are.
I'm mobile.
Why did you want me to do this interview if you don't think I know anything about what you're asking me about?
I'm just telling you. I'm done. You're done?
I'm done. You're just arguing. It's Howard Stern and...
I'm not. I was just having a conversation.
No, you're not.
I have more respect for comedy.
You're trying to be controversial.
I am not.
Yes, you are. You're just arguing with me. I have 30 years of experience.
Well, then tell me about comedy. I just think that show business is show business.
Well, then just why don't you do the interview and tell people your opinion?
We were having a good conversation.
No, it's...
Oh, come on, Gallagher.